In our country, 27 out of the 50 states still have the barbaric policy of the death penalty. One of those states is Alabama. And perhaps you read this week about a death row prisoner in Alabama. His execution was halted because they couldn't find the veins to inject him lethally. And that was at the Holman Correctional Facility in Alabama. In that same facility, whenever a prisoner is taken from the cell to the execution chamber, the prisoners have a custom of beating their hands on the cell door as loud as they can. So 150 men slam their full strength of their fists against the steel. And there's this deafening, rolling thunder that goes down the hallway. It's a show of solidarity for the condemned man. They're saying to him, "You're not going to die alone. We're with you." In the gospel today, the three men are given the death penalty, two criminals and Jesus. Now, the Roman Empire could have executed Jesus alone, one cross, one victim. But no, the Romans knew a better way to terrorize an occupied land. By crucifying them together, Rome was saying to the Jewish people, "This so-called king of yours, he's no better than these lousy criminals. No one who challenges the Roman Empire will get away with it. If this Jesus empowers the poor and challenges the powerful, if he tells nobodies that they're somebodies, if he gives people a hope for a better way to live, he'll be tortured and killed just like a common criminal." That's the message they were sending. Now, it's mind-boggling to me how Christians can still support the death penalty today. The founder of our religion, the centerpiece of Christianity, Jesus, was the victim of the death penalty. And he was innocent. It's interesting to see who ends up on the right and the left of Jesus. James and John earlier in the gospel asked Jesus, "When you come into your kingdom, when the dream of God comes about, can we have the two top spots, one at your right and one at your left?" And Jesus said, "No, those are for other people." Luke's gospel goes out of his way to tell us who Jesus associates with. He was born between two peasants, Mary and Joseph, in a stable. He ate meals between two groups, prostitutes and tax collectors. And now he dies between two thieves, one at his right, one at his left. Jesus came to bring good news to the poor. He was born in solidarity with the poor. He ate in solidarity with sinners. And now he dies in solidarity with death row prisoners, the poorest of the poor. And like the Alabama prisoners banging their cells, Jesus tells the death row prisoners by hanging with them, "You're not alone. I'm with you." To follow Jesus today, he asks us to carry our cross. We must carry our cross with those who are crucified today. So we seek racial justice for those who are discriminated against. That's why we have an anti-racism coalition. We seek to welcome the stranger and help newly arrived immigrants, and that's why we have the Speaking from the Heart program. We seek to share our bread with the hungry of Rochester, and that's why the Thanksgiving team today, or last week rather, gave out gift cards that you gave us. We gave out gift cards to families in the Rochester area so they can have a Thanksgiving. We seek healing for those who are physically ill, and that's why we had Dr. Tony from Haiti come last week, because we want to support the hospital there. We seek healing for people who suffer from anxiety, depression, and addiction, and that's why we have the Mental Health Center and the Grace of God Recovery House. We want to be in solidarity with those who are being crucified today. The word excruciating comes from the same word to be crucified. My brother Eddie once suffered from a kidney stone. Some of you perhaps have done the same thing. And he was telling us how difficult it was, and I asked him, "Ed, what was the pain like?" He said, "Jim, where excruciating leaves off, that's where the pain begins." I see a few heads nodding, right? So we are with people who are suffering where excruciating leaves off. The two thieves had a different understanding of pain. The first thief wanted to get out of pain. He saw Jesus as somebody who could relieve his pain. "If you're the Christ, then get us down from these crosses." Some people only get that far with God. They see God as somebody who can relieve their pain. That's it. That's the relationship with God. Somebody to get them out of pain. If you're the Christ, save us. Get us out of this pain. But not facing pain often brings bad results. A bullied teenager shoots his classmates. An unemployed father engages in road rage, which injures somebody. Shame and humiliation lead a person to become a terrorist. Many bars are filled with people who don't want to look at their pain. They medicate their pain instead of face it. Many people we visit in prison don't want to face their pain. Their anger, their hatred, have led them to commit crimes, and they're very much in touch with their anger. But behind the anger and behind the hatred is something much harder to talk about. The sadness of losing a parent when they're young. The pain of growing up in an addicted family. The pain of being humiliated for having a certain skin color. The wound of being sexually abused by a family member. The wound of being mocked for a disability or for being sexually different. The guilt or shame for something that person did when they were young. And our prison ministry invites the prisoners to, as Jim Smith says, sit in the pain. Sit, don't run from it. Sit in the pain and talk about it. And so in these circles, the men and the women gradually open up about their childhoods. Tears are streaming down their faces. People across the circle are saying, "Hey man, I know what that's like. It happened to me too." Sometimes our deepest pain is the feeling shame and unworthy. Our anger has become angry against ourselves. We're no damn good, we say to ourselves. But when we face our pain, when we come alive, when we start to feel some joy, the demons of self-hatred and self-rejection lose their hold. And we start to come out of the darkness. We can hold our heads high if we face our pain. So the first thief wants to run away from his pain. The second thief, we call the good thief sometimes, wants to be transformed. He stays long enough in the pain to find some healing. He finds God in his pain and struggle. He was like Jacob in the first book of the Bible, Genesis. Remember that story about Jacob? He wrestles all night with this angel, this angelic figure. And in the morning, the angel wounds him in his hip socket. And then Jacob asks the angel for a blessing. But then he realizes that his wound turns into the blessing. His blessing came in the form of a wound. Did that ever happen to you? That you were wounded, but then you found a blessing in that? The good thief, the second thief, begins by defending Jesus. He tells the first thief, "The two of us are suffering because of our crimes, but this man has done nothing wrong. He's innocent. He's one of the many people on death row that is innocent." Now, it's touching that the second thief defends Jesus. Jesus is always defending everybody else. He spent his whole life defending people, standing with them. But here, one of the few examples of anybody that stands up for Jesus, and it's a thief. He's on the cross. He's done nothing wrong, he says. Then the good thief turns to Jesus, as much as a crucified man can turn, and says, "Remember me. Remember me." Everybody wants to be remembered. When we were at Corpus Christi, Reverend Mary Rammerman built a little angel room. This little angel's room was dedicated to all the children in the parish that had died. And there's a golden plaque with the names of every child that died. Under their names were the dates of their birth and their death, and some it was the same, because they died the same day where they were born. But the parents of those children loved that room because they worried that people would forget about their deceased children. They wouldn't remember. But that little angel room assured them that they would be remembered. And I've often heard older people, maybe you have too, say, "I'm afraid my grandchildren won't remember me." Everybody wants to be remembered. And this thief says to Jesus, "Remember me. I hope I'm somebody and not a nobody. Remember me." Remember me when you come into your kingdom. Your kingdom? Why did he say that? Rome went to great lengths to discredit Jesus, to prove that he wasn't a king. They said, this so-called king of yours is no better than a common criminal. And Pontius Pilate even mocked him by putting a sign up on his cross, this is the king of the Jews. And the Roman soldiers continued while he was dying to mock Jesus and saying, if you're really the king, then come down. If you're really the king, then come down. But even though they discredited him and humiliated him, it didn't work. One person in this crowd saw the truth, the good thief. He came to understand that Jesus really was a king. One person, the thief. Remember me when you come into your kingdom. How did he know? How did he get it? Because for 3 hours he watched Jesus. He saw Jesus forgive everybody, forgive the soldiers, his executioners. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He didn't call them evil people. He called them ignorant. They don't know what they're doing. Forgive them. Then he watched Jesus take care of his mother. The beloved disciple takes care of, welcomes her into his home. He heard Jesus struggle with God, feeling abandoned by God, but persisting and finally surrendering. And when the rulers mocked Jesus, he noticed Jesus didn't mock them back. So something was different about this person next to him on the cross. The good thief somehow knew that he had an alternative kingdom. And this kingdom was about kindness, not cruelty. There's room for him in this kingdom. It was a kingdom where the nobodies were somebodies, where sinners were forgiven, where people were given second chances, where God was in solidarity with people on death row, a different kind of a king. Now, it's interesting that the good thief never would have met Jesus if it weren't for his mistake, if it weren't for his crime. He never would have met him. If he hadn't been a thief, their paths would not have crossed. So he met Jesus in the worst moment of his life, but his worst moment became his best moment. He decided right then he would take a big risk. He said to Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Steve Hogan died a few weeks ago. He used to sit over here. And he told me a story. When he met a woman named Lori, he fell in love with her, but he was very afraid. And Steve took her down to Lake Ontario at the shore, and he said, I have something to tell you. And she said, what? He said, I'm an alcoholic. She said, okay, when's the last time you drank? 10 years ago. And she said, is there anything else you want to tell me? And he always remembered that tender moment, and they got married shortly after. The good thief took a chance by requesting, remember me when you come into your kingdom. What if he got rejected? What if Jesus said, are you kidding? You're a criminal for crying out loud. But Jesus quickly assured him. He told him what he will tell you and me someday. This day, you will be with me in paradise. And then knowing Jesus, I'm guessing that after he said that, he turned to the other thief, the one that mocked him, and he said, today, you too will be with me in paradise.